Chapter 56. 150 yards ahead, cross the road, and go through a wicket on the other side. This figure seemed like that of the man who had been carrying the bundle of straw. He looked at the straw. It still stood alone. The subjoined facts sprang, as it were, into juxtaposition in his brain. Manston had been seen wearing the clothes of a laboring man, a brown smock frock. So had this man, who seemed other than a laborer, on second thoughts. And he had concealed his face by his bundle of straw with the greatest ease and naturalness. The path the man had taken led, among other places, to Tolchurch, where Cytherea was living. If Mrs. Manston was murdered, as some said, on the night of the fire, Cytherea was the steward's lawful wife. Manston at bay, and reckless of results, might rush to his wife and harm her. It was a horrible supposition for a man who loved Cytherea to entertain, but Springrove could not resist its influence. He started off for Tolchurch. 1 to 2 o'clock p.m. on that self-same midday, whilst Edward was proceeding to Tolchurch by the footpath across the fields, Owen Gray had left the village, and was riding along the turnpike road to the county town, that he might ascertain the exact truth of the strange rumor which had reached him concerning Manston. Not to disquiet his sister, he had said nothing to her of the matter. She sat by the window reading. From her position she could see up the lane for a distance of at least 100 yards. Passers-by were so rare in this retired nook, that the eyes of those who dwelt by the wayside were invariably lifted to everyone on the road, great and small, as to a novelty. A man in a brown smock frock turned the corner, and came towards the house. It being market day at Casterbridge, the village was nearly deserted, and more than this, the old farmhouse in which Owen and his sister were staying, stood, as has been stated, apart from the body of cottages. The man did not look respectable. Cytherea arose and bolted the door. Unfortunately, he was near enough to see her cross the room. He advanced to the door, knocked, and, receiving no answer, came to the window. He next pressed his face against the glass, peering in. Cytherea's experience at that moment was probably as trying a one as ever fell to the lot of a gentlewoman to endure. She recognized in the peering face that of the man as he had married. But not a movement was made by her, not a sound escaped her. Her fear was great, but had she known the truth, that the man outside, feeling he had nothing on earth to lose by any act, was in the last stage of recklessness, terrified nature must have given way. Cytherea, apostrophe he said, let me come in. I am your husband. Apostrophe, no, apostrophe she replied, still not realizing the magnitude of her peril. If you want to speak to us, wait till my brother comes. Apostrophe, apostrophe, oh, he's not at home? Cytherea, I can't live without you. All my sin has been because I love you so. Will you fly with me? I have money enough for us both, only come with me. Apostrophe, apostrophe, not now, not now. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I am your husband, I tell you, and I must come in. Apostrophe, apostrophe, you cannot, apostrophe, she said faintly. His words began to terrify her. I will, I say. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he exclaimed. Will you let me in, I ask once more? Apostrophe, apostrophe, no I will not, apostrophe, said Cytherea. Then I will let myself in. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he answered resolutely. I will, if I die for it. Apostrophe, apostrophe, the windows were glazed in lattice panes of lead work, hung in casements. He broke one of the panes with a stone, thrust his hand through the hole, unfastened the latch which held the casement close, and began opening the window. Instantly the shutters flew together with a slam, and were barred with desperate quickness by Cytherea on the inside. Damn you! Apostrophe, apostrophe, he exclaimed. He ran round to the back of the house. His impatience was greater now. He thrust his fist through the pantry window at one blow, and opened it in the same way as the former one had been opened, Before the terror-stricken girl was aware that he had gone round, in an instant he stood in the pantry, advanced to the front room where she was, flung back the shutters, and held out his arms to embrace her. In extremely trying moments of bodily or mental pain, Cytherea either flushed hot or faded pale, according to the state of her constitution at the moment. Now she burned like fire from head to foot, and this preserved her consciousness. Never before had the poor child's natural agility served her in such good stead as now. A heavy oblong table stood in the middle of the room. Round this table she flew, keeping it between herself and Manston, her large eyes wide open with terror, their dilated pupils constantly fixed upon Manston's, to read by his expression whether his next intention was to dart to the right or the left. Even he, at that heated moment, could not endure the expression of unutterable agony which shone from that extraordinary gaze of hers. It had surely been given her by God as a means of defense. Manston continued his pursuit with a lowered eye. The panting and maddened desperado, blind to everything but the capture of his wife, went with a rush under the table. She went over it like a bird. He went heavily over it. She flew under it, and was out at the other side. One on her youth and pliant limbs relies, one on his sinews and his giant size. ... but his superior strength was sure to tire her down in the long run. She felt her weakness increasing with the quickness of her breath. She uttered a wild scream, which in its ear-trending intensity seemed to echo for miles. At the same juncture her hair became unfastened, and rolled down about her shoulders. The least accident at such critical periods is sufficient to confuse the overwrought intelligence. She lost sight of his intended direction for one instant, and he immediately outmaneuvered her. "At last, my Cytherea!" he cried, overturning the table, springing over it, seizing one of the long brown tresses, pulling her towards him, and clasping her round. She writhed downwards between his arms and breast, and fell fainting on the floor. For the first time his action was leisurely. He lifted her upon the sofa, exclaiming, "Rest there for a while, my frightened little bird." And then there was an end of his triumph. He felt himself clutched by the collar, and whizzed backwards with the force of a battering ram against the fireplace. Springrove, wild, red, and breathless, had sprung in at the open window, and stood once more between man and wife. Manston was on his legs again in an instant. A fiery glance on the one side, a glance of pitiless justice on the other, passed between them. It was again the meeting in the vineyard of Naboth the Jezreelite. "Hast thou found me, O mine enemy?" And he answered, "I have found thee. Because thou hast sold thyself to work evil in the sight of the Lord." A desperate wrestle now began between the two men. Manston was the taller, but there was in Edward much hard tough muscle which the delicate flesh of the steward lacked. They flew together like the jaws of a gin. In a minute they were both on the floor, rolling over and over, locked in each other's grasp as tightly as if they had been one organic being at war with itself. Edward trying to secure Manston's arms with a small thong he had drawn from his pocket, Manston trying to reach his knife. Two characteristic noises pervaded the apartment through this momentous space of time. One was the sharp panting of the two combatants, so similar in each as to be undistinguishable. The other was the stroke of their heels and toes, as they smote the floor at every contortion of body or limbs. Cytherea had not lost consciousness for more than half a minute. As he had then leapt up without recognizing that Edward was her deliverer, unfastened the door, and rushed out, screaming wildly, "Come! Help! Oh, help!" Three men stood not 20 yards off, looking perplexed. They dashed forward at her words. "Have you seen a shabby man with a smock frock on lately?" They inquired. She pointed to the door, and ran on the same as before. Manston, who had just loosened himself from Edward's grasp, seemed at this moment to renounce his intention of pushing the conflict to a desperate end. I give it all up for life, dear life. Apostrophe, he cried, with a hoarse laugh. A reckless man has a dozen lives, see how I'll baffle you all yet. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he rushed out of the house, but no further. The boast was his last. In 1/2 minute more he was helpless in the hands of his pursuers. Edward staggered to his feet, and paused to recover breath. His thoughts had never forsaken Cytherea, and his first act now was to hasten up the lane after her. As he had not gone far, he found her leaning upon a bank by the roadside, whereas he had flung herself down in sheer exhaustion. He ran up and lifted her in his arms, and thus aided she was unable to stand upright clinging to him. What would Springrove have given to imprint a kiss upon her lips then? They walked slowly towards the house. The distressing sensation of whose wife she was could not entirely quench the resuscitated pleasure he felt at her grateful recognition of him, and her confiding seizure of his arm for support. He conveyed her carefully into the house. A quarter of an hour later, whilst she was sitting in a partially recovered, half-dozing state in an armchair, Edward beside her waiting anxiously till Gray should arrive, they saw a spring cart pass the door. Old and dry mud splashes from long-forgotten rains disfigured its wheels and sides. The varnish and paint had been scratched and dimmed. Ornament had long been forgotten in a restless contemplation of use. Three men sat on the seat, the middle one being Manston. His hands were bound in front of him, his eyes were set directly forward, his countenance pallid, hard, and fixed. Springrove had told Cytherea of Manston's crime in a few short words. He now said solemnly, he is to die. Apostrophe, and I cannot mourn for him, apostrophe, she replied with a shudder, leaning back and covering her face with her hands. In the silence that followed the two short remarks, Springrove watched the cart round the corner, and heard the rattle of its wheels gradually dying away as it rolled in the direction of the county town. XXI. The events of 18 hours, 1. March the 20th. Noon, exactly 7 days after Edward Springrove had seen the man with the bundle of straw walking down the streets of Casterbridge, old farmer Springrove was standing on the edge of the same pavement, talking to his friend, Farmer Baker. There was a pause in their discourse. Mr. Springrove was looking down the street at some object which had attracted his attention. Ah, 'tis what we shall all come to. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he murmured. The other looked in the same direction. True, neighbor Springrove, true. Apostrophe, apostrophe, two men, advancing one behind the other in the middle of the road, were what the farmers referred to. They were carpenters, and bore on their shoulders an empty coffin, covered by a thin black cloth. I always feel a satisfaction at being breasted by such a sight as that, apostrophe, said Springrove, still regarding the men's sad burden. I call it a sort of medicine. Apostrophe, apostrophe, and it is medicine. Dot, 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 I have not heard of anybody being ill up this way lately. Seem as if the person died suddenly. Apostrophe, may be so. Ah, Baker, we say sudden death, don't we? But there's no difference in their nature between sudden death and death of any other sort. There's no such thing as a random snapping off of what was laid down to last longer. We only suddenly light upon an end thoughtfully formed as any other which has been existing at that very same point from the beginning, though unseen by us to be so soon. Apostrophe, apostrophe, it is just a discovery to your own mind, and not an alteration in the Lord's. Apostrophe, apostrophe, that's it. Unexpected is not as to the thing, but as to our sight. Apostrophe, apostrophe, now you'll hardly believe me, neighbor, but this little scene in front of us makes me feel less anxious about pushing on why, that threshing and winnowing next week, that I was speaking about. Why should we not stand still, says I to myself, and fling a quiet eye upon the whys and the wherefores, before the end of it all, and we go down into the mouldering place, and are forgotten. apostrophe apostrophe is a feeling that will come, but one bear looking into. There's a backyard current in the world, and we must do our utmost to advance in order, just to bide where we be. But, Baker, they are turning in here with the coffin, look. Apostrophe apostrophe, the two carpenters had borne their load into a narrow way close at hand. The farmers, in common with others, turned and watched them along the way. Tis a man's coffin, and a tall man's too, apostrophe continued Farmer Springrove. His was a fine frame, whoever he was. Apostrophe, a very plain box for the poor soul, just the rough elm, you see. Apostrophe, apostrophe, the corner of the cloth had blown aside. Yes, for a very poor man. Well, death's all the less insult to him. I have often thought how much smaller the richer class are made to look than the poor at last pinches like this. Perhaps the greatest of all the reconcilers of a thoughtful man to poverty, and I speak from experience, is the grand quiet it fills him with when the uncertainty of his life shows itself more than usual. Apostrophe apostrophe, as Springrove finished speaking, the bearers of the coffin went across a graveled square facing the two men, and approached a grim Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.